Hey guys, we have a special guest today, Josh from Dow of Badass. Now, I've known Josh for quite a few years, and he and I are in agreement on so many things, especially the importance of like dominance and body language. And if you know anything about what I teach or anything about what Josh teaches, like that body language, that is what women, you know, receive from a man like the majority of the time. It is such an important tool in your arsenal, like every man, whether you're Asian or non-Asian, has to have. And Josh is going to come online and we're going to talk, and he's going to talk about some of what he's learned and what you can use in your game to like make you a triple threat out there. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, thanks so much, JT. Appreciate it, man. So, JT, I have a couple questions, and one of the big things that's kind of been burning my mind since I've talked to you. I mean, like I said, we just chatted for a minute, and I was like reminiscing on the conversation we had
back in the old days.
It was years and years ago, and just I forgot we were just bullshitting about whatever, and it was just like, and I meet a whole lot of dating coach or pickup guys, and there's a pretty common theme. And that is weird and weird and awkward. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that that's wrong, of course, because, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I was definitely very, very weird and awkward whenever I started out, you know. But I don't know, I feel like I was really comfortable talking to you, so I could definitely see how you'd be very, a lot better with women than a lot of guys would be, even other pickup artist guys would be.
Right.
And
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm trying to get you in bed right now, so I'm hoping this is working.
Yeah. I definitely agree. We run into a lot of just the awkward guys, and it's like runs the spectrum on both the clients that we teach, and I'm sure you run into this, but also, mm-hmm. like you said, the pickup artist guys or the dating guys. And, right. You know, you can just tell. I mean, I know it's difficult, you know, to hear, but you can tell in their tonality, but also just physically sometimes. And like, what's that guy doing? I mean, I've seen guys that will walk around like super, super slow, and I know what they're trying to do, but it looks like, man, that's just weird. We're like, why are you doing that?
You know, I had this major, major realization, because I had studied a whole lot of marketing. Marketing is probably one of the best things you can study if you want to learn how to attract women. I mean, it's just like
it's a good skill to have overall.
Oh, you know, totally.
Professionally, like, and personally.
Yeah, communication, everything, you know. And I've been doing some study. I'm a big, huge fan of mentors. Like, I would much rather sit down with the author of a book for an hour than read a book, because I just feel like I can learn so much more, you know, when I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been working with this really amazing marketing guy, and my huge lesson over the past couple of months, this is so super recent, and I ended up talking about this a lot at my last live event that I did, was that the obvious shit matters, you know? Like, it seems so obvious right now, but for a long time, it's like I couldn't see past that. Like, you're saying, why? Like, why are you walking so slow?
You know? I think people get into like the minutiae, yeah. and they think tactics. And, you know, what I tell people is like, it's the principle of the matter. Look for the forest, not just the trees.
Right. Yeah. You know, and I had like, I think that one of the big, like you're saying, when people walk really slow, or like when they sit down, they take up three seats. Like trying to be super, super, super dominant. And what happens is the finesse is the hard part, and women have learned to recognize overcompensation really, really, really well. So, you know, if you don't hit that middle ground, then you're overshooting and you're doing the exact opposite of being like quiet and, you know, afraid and stuff like that, you know. And like, I think it's really normal to go through that. I think that that's a pretty typical process to happen. I mean, I did it. I'm sure you did it too, JT.
I mean, I did it. And as one of my guys, he once said that you don't know what the edge is until you step off. You know, I stepped off the edge quite a few times, and I found myself in no man's land. I'm like, okay, that just kind of faggy. Time to stop doing that.
It's funny because, like, you know, the problem I think that holds guys back that I've noticed is that. It's not the stepping off the edge part that hurts them. It's the stepping off the edge and then having that be proof that they suck at life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean that you suck at life if you step off the edge. It just means that you found the edge, you know? And I think that, you know, for me, it was a huge realization when I stopped blaming myself for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there's a term for it. Gareth calls it chronic uniqueness. It's the idea that you think your problems are unique to you, that they're completely unsolvable, that your issues with women or whatever it is, it's so unique that you know, in this day and age of the 21st century of Google and Wikipedia, nothing could ever help you. And like every single failure is just proof that you suck because you are, you know, just chronically unique. And it's like, dude, like I've, you know, you and I have like taught thousands of men around the world. It's like, do you want a pity medal? I mean, you know, other guys are getting good at this. Like, I'm 5'5". I'm very average looking. If I can do this, you can do this.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, I mean, it's
definitely like a mental thing going on.
I think that it's not just that, though, either. It's not that it's that if you can do it. Because I know what you're saying. A lot of guys who have those excuses, I know the next excuse, and so do you. And that is, well, you were never as bad as I am. And that's, nothing could be farther from the truth. Like, I was horrific. I was worse than any of my students have ever been. This is one of the reasons why I'm comfortable. If I ever met somebody who was worse than me, I'd be like, well, when you get a little bit better, I'll be able to help you. No, you know, but I've never met anybody worse than me. I was so horrible. And I have a question.
Like, how were you in high school?
I was in high school terrible. Yeah. I was a leper in high school. No, it wasn't like,
leper colony, yeah.
You know, I wasn't, the thing is that people liked me. Like, it wasn't that no one wanted to talk to me, period. It was that no girls wanted to talk to me at all. You know, I was the guy who was like so harmless that certain jocks liked me, the poets liked me, you know, the gangsta guys liked me. You know, like I was sort of that kid who was in the middle who never really made a decision to go one direction or another, skater kids, whatever. You know, and it was because I was too afraid to make a decision because I knew that once I belonged.
You're like safe, run in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's how I felt. You know, because even like the nerdy kids, they had other nerdy kids. You know, like they had their own group, their own thing, and they had the nerdy girls, and that was their thing. But I didn't know how to leverage this sort of what ended up being one of my most powerful skill sets, which was being a social ambassador. You know, just like going from one social circle to another and being accepted everywhere. I didn't know how to leverage that at all. So I was like just complete waste of space, you know. what was everyone's got a kind of a story, and most guys have the same kind of like there's this one girl kind of story, you know, that got them into this. But, you know, what was it like, not just what got you into this, that's not really what I want to know. I'm curious, like, what was the big like downward spiral moment that happened to you?
Gosh, there are a couple.
Yeah.
When you do this long enough, you get through like these moments of euphoria and epiphany, and then like moments of just like, I want to slice my wrist.
Yeah.
Moments. Mm-hmm. You know, the classic story I always kind of tell was like before I got into Pick'em, and then it was like this really like depressing story of like when I was struggling through Pick'em, but like how I got into this, like, you know, I had the college girlfriend, but she chose me. I was so lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, engineering college, where there are like 10 guys.
Where there are tons of women in engineering college.
Yeah, exactly.
MIT is like that, you know.
It was a target-rich environment, none. and she chose me, and I thought I was the shit. You know, she was 5'10", you know, pretty blonde, blue-eyed, and it was awesome. I was like, not only was I one of the very few guys to have a girlfriend, I was pretty much the only Asian guy that had a non-Asian girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the Asians I knew were in like the international dorm, and they're like foreign, mm-hmm. and they only hung out with one another.
Right.
Kind of, you know? So I thought I was the big man on campus, and then I moved out to Los Angeles, and I realized I really suck.
Nothing will demolish your confidence like moving to a place like Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles. God. Yeah. Dear Lord. Those girls taught me a lesson. They gave me a big spanking.
Yeah. Hey, you know, could be a good thing, but in this case, probably not.
Have you ever done speed dating?
I have not, man. I've coached a lot of guys on how to do it, but I've never done it myself, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know what though? Yeah, I tried speed dating, and like first time around, I'm like, yeah, I'm the man. I've got a nice job. I'm working out. I'm dressed fine. You know, I walk in, I swagger in, and I like, okay, there's only like one or two girls. They're like nines and tens. I put like, you know, you're supposed to be like yes or no on if you want to date them.
Mm-hmm.
And I put yes only like the hottest girls there. And the next day when I get the answer back, like none of the girls said yes. I'm like, zero dates. So wow. I'm like, okay, that sucks. But you know what? Maybe I'm being a little bit too picky. Mm-hmm. So next time around in speed dating, I put like, if she's cute, if she's okay, you know, like six enough, right? So I lower my standards and I say yes to like 50% of the girls. Mm-hmm. Like, someone's we got to say yes. Mm-hmm. I get the results the next day. Zero yeses.
Oh, man.
Yeah, by this time, my ego is pretty bruised. I'm like, okay, I got to get a date. You know, this time around, I'm going to say yes to everybody. It doesn't matter. She's got like a one eye, a hung tooth, or a hunchback. Doesn't matter. I'll say yes to her. So the next day, I say yes. Every single girl. Yes, 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 yes. Uh-huh. Get the results back, and I get zero yeses.
Oh, man.
I'm like, dude, like, what's going on? Yeah, that was like kind of the moments when I'm like, okay, there's a problem here and I need to figure this out. So.
Well, what like sort of took you out of that then? Cause you were, you know, I mean, from that place, I mean, I don't know, a lot of guys would crawl into a bottle for a little while or just like give up. I mean, like why did you keep going? I mean, I know, obviously I'm glad you did and you're glad you did, you know, and a lot of guys now are glad you did. Cause now you're teaching everybody, you know, and they get to learn these secrets. What kept you going? I mean, when I hit rock bottom, I had nothing to lose. I literally thought that. I was like, worst case scenario is I'm going to be as bad as I am now. I mean, I can't get any worse. It's impossible. So you know, I kept telling you.
I think there's a lot of different factors that go into this. You know, I talked briefly about chronic uniqueness and the idea that that person's problem is unique to them and that there's nothing out there that can help them. And I think as an engineer, as essentially a rocket scientist, I mean, I worked for like space programs for NASA and the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, I knew I was smart, educated. And, you know, I'm not into like superstition or mysticism or anything like that. I'm a very practical, very kind of driven person. And I was like, yes, this sucks. You know, apparently no one likes me. I'm an outcast. But, you know, I have my intellect. I can research this and I will figure out what's going on and if there's anything I can do about it. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was like, I was going to use my intellect. You know, I was going to Wikipedia it, or, you know, Wikipedia wasn't there in existence back in those days. But, you know, I had my brain and I was going to research this. To me, there had to be a solution. I was not ready to settle down and die. And I think that attitude, you know, beyond the practical attitude, it comes from the fact that, you know, when I think about it, like my mom, you know, there were moments in time when I was very antagonistic to my mom, but like I have a deep and heartfelt respect for her because, you know, when she came over from Vietnam, like, you know, her husband, you know, my stepdad got thrown into a concentration camp and she had to escape to America and, she had a college degree from France, but it didn't mean anything. So she had to get another college degree on top of that in the United States.
Jesus.
When I think about it, like my problems dating women really mean nothing.
Wow, man, that's crazy.
big scale of things. Like, this is solvable. Like, can you imagine, you know, if for, you know, the Tea Party and the Occupy, you know, movement started a civil war and started killing each other and started throwing people into re-education camps and you and I had to escape to, I don't know, France or something like that. And here we are.
God forbid, not France, where they have bread and cheese.
And we had to escape to this other country where we didn't speak the language and our family's getting thrown into re-education camps and you don't know anyone. Like, when you frame it that way, like, your problems and my problems amount to a hill of beans compared to that. You know what I mean?
Wow, man, that's like, I did not expect that to go that deep. That was amazing.
Like, if you think about it, when my students say, if you can do it, I can do it. When I think, like, my mom, well, my mom can do that. I think I can do this.
Right. I know I'm asking you a ton of questions here. I hope you don't mind that. Like,
no, that's fine.
Okay, I don't want to, like, dominate the whole talk here, but. but, like, whenever you did start kind of going through it, and I see why you kept going, but. Whenever you started kind of seeing progress, what was like the big spring that bounced you from what's the one tweak that you made? What was the one big thing you realized was a lie? Like the big problem that you found out that you overcame? Like
You know, the big thing, and this is ironic, especially considering what I do, was that race was holding me back.
Right.
That was a big lie. And I realized that epiphany when I went backpacking through Europe for like 45 days and nights, and mm-hmm. I sarged 45 nights in a row. And I went there with like two of my buddies who are white, who were like incredibly good looking. One was a male model,
mm-hmm.
you know, essentially a male model. And the other one was like a bodybuilder. And these guys were getting, you know, girls back in the United States. And I was, you know, lagging like severely. Mm-hmm. But the moment I step in, you know, to London and I were backpacking around, I was just dusting everybody.
Huh.
Like the 45th day, I was like looking around and I was, you know, race just was no longer holding me back. And
right.
coming back to America, I no longer had that filter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like, on a practical sense, racism and prejudice, they do exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes, you know, for those of us who are minorities, we let that hold us back instead of realizing our full potential. We make excuses as to why, you know, this didn't work. Right? You know, yes, it exists, but when you let you hold yourself back and not fulfill your potential, you know, and that's what's limiting you, you know, because you're not going to put it in, you know, if you think you're going to fail from the beginning, you're not going to put it in your 110%, you might half-ass it.
Right. You know, I found one of the things that I realized, too, is that, you know, I grew up in a trailer park in San Augustine, yeah. Florida, and we had nothing.
Are you from Florida?
Yeah, I'm from Florida. Yeah, from North Florida.
Okay, no, I went to college out there. No, go ahead.
Oh, so did I. I went to college at Florida State. That's where yeah. I went. You know, and I, you know, I was in San Augustine, and... you know, it was like, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I had a great childhood. I wanted for nothing, but I had nothing at the same time.
Yeah.
And until I started going to school, and then I realized that that was weird, that, you know, that I didn't have, I lived in a trailer park, basically, and mm-hmm. that we didn't have a whole lot of money. And for a long time, I was kind of like, you know, worried about that. And for most of my life, I moved to a new city. I've lived in several different cities, and no one knows me there. And yet, I would pull that with me. It's like I brought that baggage with me unnecessarily. And eventually, I realized this like really obvious thing that might, it's kind of embarrassing how obvious it is. But it was such a huge thing for me. It was just kind of like it was elusively obvious. You know, it was right in front of my face, but I couldn't see it. And that was that when I meet a new person, they have no idea who I am. I mean, I can be anybody I want.
And you can reinvent yourself.
For every new person. And I used to think that, like, you know, you got to move to a new city, then you got to reinvent yourself there, you know. But the truth is, if you meet someone you never met before, you can be a completely new person around them, and whomever you want to be. And mm-hmm. that was a huge realization for me. So I started, you know, doing the exact opposite of what I grew up doing. You know, I started being this, like, dapper gentleman, like, wearing a suit, you know, and, like, you know, a top, double Windsor tie, like, and all this, like, fancy stuff, you know, having a flask, and I went through this process and kind of reinvented myself on another angle, and then eventually found the middle ground. But I kind of had a similar story to you, only it was my college years were very much the exact opposite of yours. I mean, I lived at Florida State, the girl to guy ratio is retardedly in the favor of men,
yeah.
and they're all hot. I mean, it's yeah. like it was like the number one party school for 3 years in a row for girls gone wild. You know, and, you know, I was not dating anybody. I was working at a gas station in Tallahassee, Florida, and I was doing Shaolin Kung Fu. So I did that for 6 years, and that was all I was doing, Kung Fu, you know.
Yeah.
It was Kung Fu full time, and I hadn't started college yet. And, you know, I met this girl at the gas station, and it was like I looked up and saw her, and it changed my life. From that moment on, things were different for me, and I haven't been able to go back to being naive again. Because it just something there was just something there. I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know how to talk or do anything. So she came in, she left, and then eventually found out that we had mutual friends. So I tried to like talk to her and stuff, and like no, I was doing the nice guy thing where it was yeah. like, well, if I hang out with her enough, she'll feel bad enough to kiss me, you know, like that.
Pity kiss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How could this not work? It worked when I was a kid. It got me.
It works in all the TV shows.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, when I was a kid and I was hungry, I just cried, you know, and it worked. So I eventually realized that it is not working. And so I ended up hiking for, I hiked about 375 miles in the Appalachian Trail. and just kind of like left Tallahassee and went on this journey to figure out what the hell manhood was, or like what the hell attraction was and what I was missing. And the thing that I found out when I was studying Kung Fu, because I was also studying Zen, is that I looked around, I kind of realized, and I think you kind of had the same, you were kind of talking about the same thing earlier, that there's a machine out here. Like, society's a machine, and attraction is a machine. You can predict which guy's going to be good with women by the way they act and the way they move their bodies. Yeah. So I was like, there's got to be some way I can hack this machine, you know, and make it work in my favor. So I went on this journey to figure it out. I mean, it took me everywhere. I was, one week I'd be, you know, sailing for the Chicago Yacht Club in all their regattas, like drinking rum with multi-billionaires. And then the next week I'm hunting in Logan, Kansas, wearing flannel. And like, you know, I'd never hunted before in my life, but I was like, why not? You know, who cares? Let me just try it out. They have 800 people there in that town, including surrounding areas, you know. And like, I just tried every extreme of everything I could possibly think of. And nothing was really working for me. I mean, I did a lot of really, had like really great experiences, but nothing helped me with women until I sort of hit rock bottom. And whenever I was, you know, I got smart enough to be able to attract a girl, and then I got really needy, you know? And so I let her just shit talk me, basically, like just be complete bitch to me and psychologically abuse me, just emotionally make me feel like crap and all this stuff. And I was just like, well, I can't do any better, so I should probably, you know, probably not screw this up. You know what I mean?
I think we all been there.
Yeah, it's a really, really sad place to be. Like, I was just such a pathetic guy at the time. And there's nothing wrong with it, really. I think everyone has to go through it. But, you know, the moment I realized I was pathetic was a really interesting moment. I had to sleep in my car for a few days. We were living together in North Carolina. And I had to sleep in my car for a few days because her dad was coming to visit, and she didn't tell him that we were living together. So she was like, you got to get all your stuff out, and you got to, like, whatever. So I was working two jobs, and I was dead tired, but I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do anything you want. Like, of course, yeah. And I was trying to be a good boyfriend. So I packed all my shit up in my car, not even for a second realizing that this was fucked up, you know? Yeah. Like, just didn't even cross my mind. So I pack it up, and as soon as I leave, I realize I don't know anybody. So I'm homeless right now for a few days. So I drive around and find a vacant house that's being sold, and I park my car behind it. You know, for a couple of days, I'm like sleeping in my car and then waking up and going to a cafe in the bathroom, like washing myself off and then going to work, you know? And then I was trying to let no one know that I was sleeping in my car because I was embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I was embarrassed. So I'm doing that, but it was so rough for me, like sleeping in my car, because all my stuff was in the back seat. I couldn't lay it down, couldn't lay my seat down to sleep. And it was so hot, I had to sleep with the windows open, but there were so many mosquitoes that I had to have a blanket over me. So I was like this really terrible, like sweating under a blanket in 95 degree heat with mosquitoes flying all around me.
That's for love, right?
Well, this, I know, it's crazy. And it got worse. And I thought that was pretty bad already, but the third night that I was there, it got horrible. I was sitting there, and apparently the neighbors saw me and called the police. So I'm trying to sleep. I slept about 2 hours a night during this time, and I hear police creeping up on me, and they scream, freeze, you know, put your hands out the window, don't move, or we shoot. They all have the guns pulled on me, uh-huh. And I was just out of it, but scared shitless. And, you know, eventually they realized I wasn't a threat, so they put their guns away, but they're like, what are you doing here? So I was half asleep, so I just told them the truth, which is probably a smart thing to do anyway, but told him the truth, and one of the cops turned off his flashlight, and he looked at me, paused, and I was like looking at him, you know, totally unaware that he thought this was absolutely nuts. They tried to figure out whether or not I was just making this up. And he goes, are you serious? And I was like, oh man, I realized right then that I was a huge pussy, you know? So, he's like, well, look, you can't stay here, but you gotta go, and you gotta go to Walmart parking lot. So on his way out, he's like, you know, turned around, I start talking to his friend. He goes, and I heard him say, he was in the middle of a sentence, and I heard, blah, 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 poor bastard, you know? And I was just like, man, I was in a daze, drove to Walmart, and I couldn't go to sleep anymore. So I reached in the back seat to grab my notebook, from college, and I just start reading it, you know, and it was my psychology notebook, and that's when I started finding stuff in there that I'd never heard anybody talk about. I don't even remember learning, but I started using it. Like, so the next day, I was like, I'm going to try this out, and I did, and it started working, and I was like just blown away, you know. Within a matter of weeks, I was dating multiple women, and I was a complete waste of space. I had broken up with my girlfriend. I was dating multiple women, and they all knew about each other, and they're all cool with it, and it was just like the beginning of this really crazy learning experience for me. And I was telling you about this a little bit before. I think one of the things that I did that really helped out a whole lot is that I'm like a meticulous tester. I test everything. You know, I took everything that anybody had ever told me that had ever worked in the history of man, and I tried it, and then I broke it all apart as much as I possibly could. I'd try 1,000 different variations of one sentence. You know, I'd do it with body language, without body language. I'd do it and tweak one word, tweak a different word, tweak two words. I did everything I could possibly think of until I found a pattern. And I just did this with a lot of stuff, you know. And eventually I started realizing these sort of core pieces at the center, you know, that made everything tick. And that was really like where things started changing for me, is that I started having that sort of weird experience. You know, and then I got, you know, when I talked to you, last time I talked to you, I was, you know, I would talk to you, I was talking to you on the phone doing this conference call thing. And then like the next day or a couple of days later, I'd be in the Today Show studio, you know, doing a piece with Today Show. Then I had a show on Sirius XM. Like, I was on top of the world, but, you know, and I felt like I could have any woman I wanted. But whenever you have that place, I don't know how this is for you, same way for you, JT, and I'm really curious to see if it is. But when you're at that place where you realize you actually have choices, and yeah. You, I mean, you really can have any woman you want. I mean, you know, save maybe a couple or two or three that might be too blind. I don't know. Blind and deaf. You know, yeah. I don't really know. But even like married women, it wouldn't matter. Like, I got kind of nervous because it was so easy to attract anybody, any woman. So I was like, okay, well, I can have any woman I want. Who do I want? You know, and the answer was, I still wanted that girl from the gas station, you know, from way back in the day. Yeah. And sort of like make a long story longer. I'm living with her. She's in the other room right now. And I went back and got her, and we're living together, and I couldn't be happier, you know.
That's great.
In between the time when I started and now, I mean, I dated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women, maybe even four digits. I don't know. I stopped counting. But but it was like I dated tons of women. And using these same techniques, it became easy for me, and it's just nothing like looking at the woman of your dreams and saying, "I've had a taste of every woman. Basically, I know what it's like, and I want you," you know, and never doubting that for a split second. You know, what's been your decision since? I know a lot of guys who are like, "I can have any woman I want, and I want several," you know, so they just keep going. What has been your experience with that? Like how, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think everybody goes through an evolution. You know, I've had guys come in like, I want to sleep with like hundreds and hundreds of women. And then, you know, they get to about a dozen and then like, I just want a girlfriend now. And then I'm like the reverse. A guy would be like, I want a girlfriend. And then he gets a girlfriend like, ah, it was too easy. I want a better girlfriend.
Yeah.
You get that girlfriend. It's like, oh, that was too easy. I need a hotter girlfriend.
Right.
Oh, and so I run the gamut. Like me personally, you know, I've done the Playboy lifestyle, travel the world, you know, girl in every harbor kind of deal, and you know, I enjoy that. But you know, at this point, I'm like, you know, older and wiser, and it's fun. And then, as you say, it's the ability to have choice, and you're not limited, so that you don't have this kind of tunnel vision when it comes to women. And at this point in my life, I am, you know, not that concerned about sleeping with hundreds and hundreds of women. I've already hit that mark, and it's fine. It's fun, but to me, it's like I think maybe you said this. You know, I've tasted the rainbow, the many colors of the rainbow, and I'm full. And I think I am at this point not necessarily ready for a relationship, like serious relationship, but you know, it's on the horizon. And,
right.
Yeah, and it's the nice ability of when you have options with women. One of the things I'll tell a girl is like, I'm okay if you're like a diamond in the rough, but I don't want to fix her upper. I don't want to, you know, take a beautiful girl who's like broken inside, and mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like all these types of girls, like the strippers and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're gorgeous, they're sexy, but they're just something like tragically broken inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to fix them. I want a girl that, you know, it's like that comes and she's, you know, as dedicated to improving herself and being a terrific, you know, woman that I'm trying to be as myself as a man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my career, my, you know, my company and, you know, my, you know, helping the students. So,
What is it that we'd say that, that's been your main focus lately? You know, maybe besides business, because I know business is probably 95% of your focus. If you're anything like me, I'm so tunnel. I have such tunnel vision. But like, as far as personal development goes, after all the stuff you've been through and like you've been through more than I have, because you had to go through, I mean, I had to go through the poor thing, but you had to go through the race thing. I mean, that's like, that is way, it's infinitely harder for someone to overcome that, because I can blend into a crowd in my current state. You could never, you know, you're always going to stand out. So you're kind of forced to do it. So you've been through a whole lot in your life. And I know that what you teach now is like, it teaches guys to sort of get that almost instantly. So
One thing I want to jump in there really quickly, and, you know, because I know you teach a lot of body language. And this is what I tell, and this I think you can use this for your own students if they're Asian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure you get like a lot of students who speak, you know, English isn't their first language, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always tell my Asian students, like, the universal language that everybody understands, whether they're like American or European, Australian or Asian, everybody understands universal language is body language.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tell my students. Like, it doesn't matter if you don't speak good English. If you have really good body language, you can still attract women.
Mm-hmm. You know, a classic story for that is or an example of that. Have you ever attracted and, you know, hooked up with a girl that didn't speak spoke a language you didn't speak? Like, where she did not speak English or any other language that you speak, and you had no idea what she was saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, not completely, but like close.
Well, man, you know, I saw someone do this for the first time before I did it. I only done it a couple times. The first time I saw this, I thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world. But it was sort of a testament that body language is uber important, you know, obviously. And they're in a place, usually it's in a, you know, whenever you're in a place where they're the person who doesn't speak your language, meaning that they're coming to visit maybe your town or whatever, and they're from out of town. Because then they're already in like a new mindset of like, well, I don't understand, so it's okay, you know. But it was the first time I saw this was a friend of mine, a guy who ended up being my friend, and he was just flirting, and making out with these girls, and then he walked off, and I walked up to him. I was like, hey, how do you guys know that guy? Because I was just kind of curious because he was such a badass, and they were like, oh no, speak English, and I was like, are you serious? He just sitting here talking to you for like 30 minutes. And they're laughing and like all over him, and he was just like and I saw him later on, and I was like, you know, do you speak multiple languages? And he's like, no, because I had no idea what they were saying. They were just hot, you know. And I thought that was really funny. And you know, I agree. Like, that was my first introduction to body language, was that moment.
Yeah. I think, what is it, like, psychologists say something like 80-90% of the communication that a woman receives is like body language.
You know, I've heard as far as 93, and then I've heard as low as 60. 93, I've heard, is the actual number, like the scientifically proven number. I always teach 60 because it's like the lowest I've ever heard, and I don't want, you know, I just like, even if at its worst, it's 60%, which is still
more than half your game.
Exactly, you know. Exactly. And then what the funny thing is that half of the remaining, like 20 more percent, is vocal tonality. So that means to only 20%, in my case, and the way that I describe it, is what you actually say. You know, no, I think it's a important 20%. I think it's not like, it's not something you can just throw out the window. I mean, you have to have a really good, playful conversation at times. If you know, it's just good to have it, just in case you need it, like, you know, banter, things like that. And I banter a lot. Like, whenever I started doing banter and sort of joking around with women, if I did it without the proper playful body language, then it didn't work at all. And if anyone has ever tried,
I think you and I are in complete agreement on the importance of body language.
Yeah,
you know, because it's something that I stress with my guys, from facial expressions to, you know, the speed and the tone of your voice. and how you move your body and, like, you know, they call it proximate and all this kind of stuff, I think is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
We spent like hours and hours teaching it, and that's how you came up with, like, the Tao of Badass, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, exactly. I was going through and breaking down, as I was trying all these different things, I broke down just the stuff that made everything tick, and I just had this, really weird, you know how you have like a superpower, JT? It's like something that you can do that you didn't realize was a skill set till you got older. Like,
yeah.
Like you thought everyone could do it, and then you realize that's not the case, you know? And I had the same thing. Mine is seeing patterns, and I thought that everyone could do the same pattern recognition that I can, but I have some really inhuman ability to be able to see patterns. And so what would normally take someone 3 lifetimes to figure out these patterns took me, you know, 5-6 years maybe. Or 8 years really technically, but you know, I was really focusing a lot 5-6 years. And so what I started doing was breaking down all these little things, and what I found is that the core of a lot of stuff is body language, but there are a few more, and everything that I did that I tweaked that gave me a major level up, like huge, had a huge impact. That was like
you got that mushroom and you go exactly. Bigger.
Blink, 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 you know. And then I had the firepower after that. But yeah, so I would like all these things that gave me that level up were things that I eventually put into the Tao of Badass. Like if I had to teach a guy how to be a complete badass with women, not just like be okay, but be a complete badass as fast as possible, those are the things that I put in there, you know. And actually the thing that I was curious about, you did recently, I think it was recently, you did Text to Sex.
Yeah.
And I'm curious because you had to take a really difficult, that's a really difficult thing to do because now you're taking away all the body language. So I'm kind of curious, like, how did you replace the body language in Texas Sex? Like what are some key, like, you know, I don't know, just like cornerstones for that helped you because it can be really complicated.
Right, right. Well, you know, Texas Sex was co-invented with my lead instructor, Gareth Jones, who is by far the top phone, you know, seduction artist I've ever met in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always used a more brute force method when it comes to phone calls and text message, mm-hmm. which is basically numbers game. Like all these numbers I would get, I would just like shoot, like, you know, dozens of text messages or phone numbers and see what stuck. While Gareth was more a finesse artist,
mm-hmm.
and I actually used what he was using to improve mine. But, you know, like some really quick things that guys can do, you know, whoever's listening here can, like, actually text this out to girls because, like you said, like, there is no body language, there is no keynote, there is no facial expressions. So a lot of your weapons in your arsenal are taken away.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing is, let's say you're not good at body language or you're not good at, you know, speaking English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? You can text. And you can put it through a spell checker, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a give and take. But one funny kind of text message opener I like to give my guys, a couple of them anyway, they can shoot their girl. It's just to elicit a response or maintain daily presence in her mm-hmm. mind's eye. One of them goes like, "Those beautiful eyes, those sexy lips, the smoothest of walks, dot, dot, dot. But enough about me." Right? And then anyway, she texts you back, like, "Oh, you're funny."
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And then there's another one. Let's say you're trying to set up a date, right? Let's say you're ice skating. Let's say you want to take her out ice skating. So you can send a text message, something like, "Hey, do you know the difference between, you know, adventurous sex and ice skating?" And she'll text back, "I don't know what." "Well, since you don't know anything about adventurous sex, how about we just go ice skating?" So these are things, and it's good for everybody, but it's also good because there's a kind of a copy and paste element where you can repeat these things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be that great at you know, English, that's per se, or
mm-hmm.
even if you are, you can still kind of fine tune it because, you know, some guys, it'll take a while to embody the body language or to embody those elements, because you
right.
know, if you're like me, you know, I'm like a hard gainer. If you guys know anything about like weightlifting and bodybuilding, it takes a lot of work for me to gain incremental results.
Me too. I'm the same exact way. I was like, I don't know. I was like 130 pounds soaking wet for most of my life.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, you know, a lot of hard work, get results, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of blah, blah, stuff like that. So with text, it'll, you know, what people don't realize with phone, just basically phone game, is that the majority of time spent or not spent with a woman is when you're not around her. And, you know, you have to maintain some sort of presence in her life where she's going to forget you. So that's kind of, you know, you have to have some sort of holding pattern game to remain in her life and then to set up the day out, you know, some opportune time for whatever activity.
You know, another great thing about texting and being really good at it is that when she responds back, you've got all the time in the world to think about what you're going to say, you know?
Exactly.
She's not looking at you. You're not sitting there dumbfounded, like going,
Yeah, what's a good response to this one?
Yeah, and when you pee yourself, she's not going to see it. It's just, you know, you can literally sitting on the toilet writing it back, you know, it's not a big deal. Yeah, yeah, and, you know, it's a necessity. I think a lot of, you know, here's something that I really want to touch on, and you probably noticed this, is that a lot of guys who are a little bit older who, you know, spent most of their lives was spent without cell phones being invented, you know. And now that this has popped up, a lot of older guys, I think, have really held off from learning how to text really well, you know. But I would really like to take this time here to implore them to try integrating it a little bit, at least a little bit, because it's kind of like saying, yeah, I could use that Uzi, but I'd rather fight these 15 thugs with a knife.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like you're in a fight with one hand tied behind your back.
It's like, you know, don't have all the tools, you know?
Yeah, it's today's day and age. I mean, the majority of women have cell phones. You know, I don't know if it's the majority of girls. I was reading some statistic, I don't remember off my top of my head, but, you know, there's a huge, you know, percentage of women that regularly text flirt and sext and stuff like that. So if you're an older guy and you're just dating older women, all right, that's fine, you know, that's whatever. But if you're trying to date young women in their 20s or college age, like, you know, you and I, then it's a form of communication. I feel like it's similar to how some guys will be like, oh, I don't need a dress, you know, put on a good suit or you know, have good fashion. It'll just come out. But, you know, why would you limit yourself, you know, to just one weapon, whether it's body language or fashion or facial expressions or, you know, bantering and verbal game or phone game, you know? It's better to be a Renaissance man than a one-trick guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, the truth is that the world demands you to be a Renaissance man. I mean, you can't – you cannot thrive. You can survive, but you can never thrive unless you know these different skill sets. The funny thing is that sort of when I built Dow, that was what I had in mind. I was like, you know, if I had to consider this skill set like anything, like an analogy, or this, you know, being good with women, like really good with women, like an analogy, it would be that it's kind of like a bike tire, and that you are the hub at the center, and what you want is to have a bike, that tire that can actually roll, that works. And each one of your skill sets is kind of like a spoke that connects out to the outside. If you have one spoke, I don't care how thick it is, it's not going to work. You know, it just won't have enough to support. Two won't work either. I mean, you need lots of different skill sets. So you have to study all sorts of different things in order to get it, you know. And I think that when guys get into this, I know for me, when I got into it, the first thing I did was probably what 99% of guys do, which is went online and I searched for pickup lines. Yeah. That was the first thing I did. I was like, well, you know, this is whenever Google had just come out. Like, it was like, you know, I looked it up and there was like maybe one page that was like a yellow flashing background or something, like something terrible I could barely read. And it was just a list of pickup lines. And I was like, oh man, you know, I found one that I thought I could do. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try this out. So I went to a bar, which I never did, ever. I never went to bars. And I walked in and I was like, okay, you know, I had this picture in my head of just like this girl leaning up against the bar. And then by herself, I walk up, I lean over, like kind of like raise one eyebrow a little bit, you know, and then say this pickup line. And then she goes, ooh, who are you? Let me get you a drink. And then she talked, you know, I was like, I really thought this was going to happen. Like I thought for real that was going to happen. So I walked in and I see a girl, and it's not at all like I thought. I mean, as soon as I walk in, I get super anxious because it wasn't like the the lights were dim, but I could see her face, and she was like standing there stirring a drink, waiting for someone to come talk to her. It was like stimulation everywhere. Guys were bumping into me while I was walking over. And I get over there, and I say it, and she goes, "What?" And then I say it again. She goes, "That's stupid." And then I walked, turned around, and I walked through the gauntlet, and then walked out the door, and then went home. And I didn't go into a bar again for 5 years.
Yeah.
After that, I didn't think that, I thought it was like it's impossible. It was impossible, you know. And I think that's what happens to a lot of guys is that they sort of get into this, and we think there's this one thing we got to learn, one magic pill, you know, that will get us 99% of the way there. And we're going to find it immediately. Well, the truth is, I think that there is kind of a magic pill that, you know, one, like a few magic simple secrets that if you discover them, it will cut your learning curve down to like, you know, from year, literally from years to days. I mean, literally, you know. Yeah. And but the problem is that they're just so hard to find because there's a sea of crap, you know,
yeah,
out there.
But, you know, it's like, you know, information paralysis, analysis paralysis. But also, I think sometimes people forget that it depends on like where you're coming from. You know, some guys are gonna need like the big picture, while other guys are gonna need the smaller picture. And some guys don't need to learn how to banter because they're already good at bantering, and they don't need to learn verbal routines. They just need to maybe jazz up their dominance and their sexuality. You know, you have to take a very serious look at oneself, and you know, if you're willing to admit that there's a problem, you know, you should be able to say that, okay, let me look at myself and let me make an honest appraisal. Not to, you know, beat yourself up over, but like, what's, you know, what areas are you lacking? What can you do about it? Because, you know, there, like you said, there are possibly like these magic pills or these things that can cut down your learning curve, but you have to like be able to apply it to you.
Right.
People just, they go out and they read and they read and they read and they think it all applies to them. And so they're trying to read everything, absorb everything, and not realizing maybe that's just not who they are. You know, I think, you know, I don't try to clone myself upon my students. And I think, you know, I give them the various tools and I, you know, they personalize. And I think that's important. Like, pick, you know, a technique, a principle, a role model that speaks to you as a person. And follow that, because you know, you're not, you know, we say reinvent yourselves. I think we mentioned that in the beginning, but I think it's the idea to reinvent the better you, not completely as a different person, but reinvent the better you. It's like, what can you do to make, you know, this Josh or this JT even more badass?
Right. You know, I think that kind of hits on a subject, and I'm glad you brought this up. It kind of reminds me of the Archimedes quote. Quotation that I'm going to kind of paraphrase here, which is, give me a long enough lever and I can move the world, you know? And it's kind of like, yeah, the lever is the skill that you can learn or the secret, but you have to put it in the right leverage spot, like the right place within yourself. So, you know, if there's no place to put it, it won't really work for you, you know?
Right.
I'm personally a big fan of trying everything out, you know, and just seeing what does and what doesn't work for me. Another thing, though, to do is to, like you're saying, when you do find somebody that you can follow, just consume everything they can tell you, like everything they can possibly tell you. You know, if they create a new thing, go get it and try it out. You know, and just see, and if anything, just to see where your sort of leverage point is, so you can have that long lever, you know, to sort of move your world in a sort of sense. You know what I mean? And that can be extremely helpful, and I think a lot of guys shy away because I feel like, you know, I don't know, JT, we're in an interesting industry, you know. I mean, I think a lot of guys promise this, you know, buy this one thing, you'll be good forever kind of stuff. And the truth is, you don't need to keep improving yourself, but if you want to get as good as like say you and I are at this, or I'm hoping even better than you and I are at this. Then you really have to continue to improve yourself and not be satisfied with an okay version of yourself, but to actually be the best version.
Yeah, I absolutely completely agree. I think it's a sad day when we as men decide that, okay, this is all I will ever be. I've reached my genetic limit. And this is it. You know, I'm throwing in the towel. I think, you know, we as men, this is what we strive for. I think this is why, you know, one of the reasons why a woman can love or will love a man is because of, you know, we build empires. This is who we are, what we want to do.
Right.
And, you know, just whether it's trying out everything or specializing, you just got to go out and do it. I think that's the first and most important step, whether it's, you know, learning how to approach women or fixing your body language. It's going out there and taking that first step.
Right. Well, man, I know it's been kind of a long call here, but it's been stellar.
I think we went over quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I know you were making everything you were talking about up, but, you know, I was trying to be... No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you were making everything up, but I was yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Only the best parts. Awesome. Cool.
Cool. So, I guess if I can get Gareth on another call, that'd be fantastic, too. Maybe we can get him a little bit more focused on just the tech stuff. Like, you're kind of a legend, JT. So it's like,
am I? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know you are. It's kind of like, you know, you've been around for a while, and... you know, you just kind of like you've been known for teaching a lot of guys.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it was really good to get you on, and like I really was curious about your background and everything too, because again, you know, someone who's persevered so much, you know, that comes out the other side like this is just like you gotta know where it came from, you know?
Yeah.
So I really appreciate you being on, man. Thank you so much.
Not a problem. I appreciate you on as well. And it's been like really amazing stories and information. How can, you know, our audience find more about you?
Well, you know, I had this video that is kind of gone viral in a lot of ways. So it's kind of been running around and guys have been checking it out. So if you want to send people to it, you know, maybe put a link underneath the interview or something, or maybe they can check it out. I give away some really amazing insights into it. Kind of the big picture of things that really took me from, you know, craptastic to pretty amazing with women, and I tried to deliver as many as I could without overloading anybody. And it's called the infamous goldfish video. And I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to give away the secrets. But they can just you know, click the link below if you can make a link or something, and sure. Then you know, check out that video if they have a few minutes to watch it. I will say though, don't watch it at work because there's just you know, it gets a little racy. If, you know, if someone's like hanging out, I'm not going to show any pictures of anything weird, but it does get a little bit racy. So I'd watch it at home if you can, and get a pencil and a piece of paper to take notes for it, because it's some pretty valuable stuff. So they can check it out there. If they decide to grab the Dow of Badass, they can maybe go from there and grab it. You know, but if at the very least, I think they should at least watch that video. It's free. For now, I may have to take it down soon because that's just what happens.
Hey, I want to watch it now.
Yeah, exactly.
This goldfish video, just from the name alone, I'm curious.
I found a really interesting way to explain something that would normally be really complicated in a way that everybody who's watched the video has totally understood and implemented. So it's been pretty interesting. So they can check that out. I'd be more than happy to let your list check that out for free as long as it's up.
Right. Cool. Thank you so much, Josh.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.